5 days after this article was actually available to read online, the medical board decided to have an emergency meeting. And in that emergency meeting, they at 5:30 p.m. on a Thursday released this emergency suspension of my license to practice medicine. I can no longer see patients, write prescriptions. I cannot do anything.
But it's morphed, at least with regards to the vaccine issue. This is happening across the country. Boards are becoming the enforcers for mandatory vaccine laws. And you can see it happening across the country. So if they can roll out a mandatory vaccine law and then have the boards enforce this, I mean, in California, all the docs who wrote medical exemptions are under board review. It's automatic. They're passing a bill, or they're working to pass a bill in Oregon this next round that does the California thing, but one step further. They create an automatic new board that reviews all medical exemptions and immediately sends them to the respective medical boards. I mean, they are setting it up so, folks, if you think you have a medical exemption, there's not a doctor in the land that's going to be able to write a medical exemption anymore. And the medical exemptions that they're mostly rolling out the new laws are only one vaccine. You have to have almost died from it, but it doesn't save you from the rest. And the exemption is only good for a year, and the physician writing that's going to be reported to the board. It's basically, you have to do what the CDC says, basically what the government says, or you lose something, right? In the case of children, it's you lose school. What's going to come down the pike with COVID, folks, just have your eyes wide open, because they're going to try to say this is a public emergency. And, you know, that's another whole story we can get into at a different time. But what I'm bringing up is the point that you're going to be forced to do it, or what? What can they hold over adults? Well, you might not be able to go to work. You might not be able to get on an airplane. Eventually, there's certain businesses that will exclude you. You might eventually have to carry a COVID passport, some way of showing that you've had the vaccine to kind of move about society. This is, if you just think that through, I hope that gives you pause.
Hi, I'm Michael Turner, MD. I practice integrative medicine. I have a telemedicine practice based out of Washington State. And interestingly enough, as regards the vaccine, we've been in a fairly aggressive vaccine promoting environment in our state, as you may understand. And off record, I have friends of good conscience, medical professionals who are concerned, especially as regards the mandates for children, especially as regards being a condition of schooling or something like that. And in confidence, talking to one of my friends, I asked him, what are your thoughts? How are you approaching this? He's a pediatrician in the employment of a local hospital. And he told me that he's not allowed to speak openly with his patients about it. He told me that an email went out to all the staff of the hospital that basically said, if you were to speak in anything less than enthusiastic terms about the vaccines, that you'd be subject to termination, that it'd be considered COVID misinformation, would be considered off topic and against protocol. And so he felt obviously silenced on that basis, and it became a subject of consternation for him.
Went out to all physicians from the medical board saying, any physician in California who writes an inappropriate exemption for masks or other COVID-related measures will have his medical license subjected to investigation and disciplinary action. So for a physician, just to help you to understand, this kind of threat hanging over your head is worse than the threat of getting fired. If I get fired from a particular healthcare organization, I can go to another healthcare organization or go start a private practice. If I lose my medical license, I cannot practice medicine. Okay? That's how serious this is. The letter never defined what might constitute an appropriate or inappropriate mask mandate. So I have no idea if I write a mandate for a kid with a severe anxiety disorder that's worsened by the wearing of a mask, is that going to subject my medical license to disciplinary action? Physicians in California interpreted the phrase and other COVID-related measures to include vaccines, which had already been rolled out at that point. It has become de facto impossible to get a medical exemption for a COVID vaccine in the state of California. No physician will write them, even when you have someone that has a contraindication listed on the CDC's list of contraindications to COVID vaccines. I have a patient, went to her rheumatologist specialist in her autoimmune condition. This specialist told this patient, I don't think you should get the COVID vaccines given your age, your low risk of COVID, and I think there's a good chance that these vaccines, based on the data that we have, could worsen your underlying medical condition. She turned to the same physician immediately afterwards and said, can you write me, therefore, a medical exemption? Because I need one for work. There's a vaccine mandate at work. Same physician that just told her not to take the vaccine or recommended against it said, no, I'm sorry, I can't write you a medical exemption because I'm afraid I might lose my license.
The medical board in Minnesota has taken issue with the fact that my patients, when they come into our clinic, receive informed consent on vaccines. We talk about the risk and we talk about the benefit. And if patients leave without vaccinating, the medical board is suggesting I must have talked them out of it. And we're fighting not only for our state, for medical doctors in Minnesota, where I practice, but also around the country. We have lots of evidence now that medical boards have targeted certain physicians and many of our states to try to challenge them to stop giving informed consent. When we look at any other medical procedure or recommendation, whether you should use Tylenol or not, treat an ear infection with antibiotics or wait a few days and see what happens. Here's a surgery. It might help you, but here are the risks of the surgery. You can wait a few years and make your decision. Every single medical decision within healthcare will have a risk and a benefit and informed consent. And again, sometimes it is such an imminent risk to a patient that a legal system might overrule a patient's decision. You know, if we're talking about a life-threatening condition, you're going to die if we don't do this, and you're going to die now. Well, there's a different discussion that has happened than, say, with vaccines. You know, boy, Dr. Bob, vaccines really made a difference with this condition or this disease over the last 40 or 50 years. Don't you think patients should continue to vaccinate? Well, I think within the standard of care, we all start at the CDC schedule. And if we start there, then we say yes. And if a family says, but Dr. Bob, I looked at the statistics on the CDC website, and it looks like we have one case of diphtheria every 5 years in our country, and penicillin treats it. Why do I need to do the vaccine? Well, we say that's a great question. And as we talk about informed consent, the benefit for your child of the vaccine is pretty low. And I would argue that. And I do argue that.
Is it because Big Pharma's involved? Are medical boards paid off? Have they simply become political tools and they're not really about medicine at all? It seems to be much more of a political move.
Correct. One of the concerns that we have is that medical boards can receive a complaint from anyone around the country. Ben, I've never had a single patient complaint about care that I've provided. Not a single issue in the care that I provide for a patient has gone before the medical board. In my case, and for many of us, there are no patient complaints about our care. People around the country, and this is where, you know, it's political, strongly held convicted beliefs on both sides of the vaccine issue. People from around the country have complained about me. And I understand the medical board had to talk to me and find out what was going on if they were getting reports from different states, mostly stem from interviews I've given or from conferences where I've attended and presented. And without a single patient complaint, we would suggest that there should be no investigation, that everything else falls into First Amendment protections, and individual patient care should always be defended and should always be scrutinized, I believe. But without a reason to be looking at individual patient care, the medical board shouldn't be involved. There is a suggestion around our country that medical boards, without any liability, without any recourse, I cannot recover financial damages to my career, my profession, or my livelihood when the medical board forces me into court. I spend my money. They have unlimited money and immune from litigation. We have other legal avenues, but money talks. And many of the medical doctors around the country find that as a concern, that this is my livelihood. The medical board overnight can take away a license like they did with Dr. Paul Thomas. And without any recourse to them as an entity. So we do recognize that medical boards have essentially unbridled, unrestricted power and no financial incentive for them not to be as aggressive as they would like to be, and no recourse if, in my case, we believe they are involved in the care I provide without a reason to be there in the first place.
Well, the complaints that have come against you seem to have come from people who don't know you. They're not patients of yours. These are people from across the country who have never had any medical experience with you, who do not know you personally, and yet they don't like what you're saying. So really, this isn't an attack on medicine so much as it's an attack on belief and on speech. Why is the medical board giving credence to people who are simply saying, I don't like what this doctor says, therefore he shouldn't be allowed to practice medicine? Because it's not just in Minnesota, right? There seems to be a commonality of this happening across the country from various medical boards.
That's exactly it. And it is so hard to believe that this is happening in the United States, although we did see social media censorship over the course of this last year. This fight is bigger than any one of us in the country. As medical doctors, this is a fight that has to happen at the national level to help protect our licenses and our abilities to practice medicine unique to our patient in the office. If we get down to a one size fits all, that's artificial intelligence, and we don't even need doctors anymore. We need a computer. And I think many of my patients would agree they want a doctor, not a computer.
They take this as a mandate, not a recommendation. And so parents will be kicked out of practices if they don't follow the CDC schedule. So you'll see there's a birth dose in yellow of hepatitis B. Jump to the 2-month visit and there are 6 different vaccines. That 3 of those have way too much aluminum. We're gonna cover aluminum because it's very, very important. What ended up happening was I noticed my patients were not doing very well. So in 2000, I was in medical school and graduated in 1985. I taught residents and medical students for 5 years. And then I went into a private practice for 13 years. In the last 3-4 years of that private practice, in 2004, 5, 6, and 7, I saw that my patients were not doing well. In fact, I had a kid who was normal at 1, regress into severe nonverbal autism at 2, each of those 4 years. November of 2007 was the last time I couldn't do this any longer. I walked into a well 2-year visit. I'm gonna call this little boy Jack. He's in my practice today. He just turned 16. He is still nonverbal to this day. He had been normal at 1 when I saw him, and he was completely nonverbal and had no eye contact at 2. And I just knew too much. I could no longer do business as usual. Well, in February of 2019, the most interesting letter came from the medical board. They said to me, prove that this vaccine-friendly plan is as safe as the CDC schedule. And I literally laughed that they've never proven that what they're doing is as safe as what they did the year before, or they've never compared what they do to anything. They just do it. But some smart person said, well, Paul, why don't you just do a quality assurance data analysis and see what you find, which is perfect. Quality assurance is done in hospitals and health systems. If you've got an intervention, you want to see, is your intervention helping or hurting? And it was actually a brilliant idea. So we did that. We got the data. I de-identified the data and sent it off to Jack Lyons Wheeler, who's a really good science nerd. He gets stuff done. He knows statistics very, very well. And we published this article. So this came out on November 22nd, 2020. And what we did with this study, so actually I think I'm missing a slide, or maybe it's later. This was available online the 28th of November, and on December 3rd, they pulled my license. So it was an emergency suspension of my license. I was a threat to public health. So apparently this article was a threat to public health. Here's what we did. In my practice, we looked at just the patients born into the practice from the day I opened my doors in 2008. I remember I left my old group practice, started integrated pediatrics, right up until we did this data set in February, the month they asked for it. So every baby born into my practice, we didn't do what pharma does where you pick and choose who you put in your study. We looked at every single patient. I had 561 unvaxxed, 2,763 variably vaxxed. We do informed consent. Some parents come in, they know they don't want vaccines, great. Some parents come in, they want the vaccine-friendly plan, okay. Not so okay, but that's if they insist, that's what we do. I mean, the parents get to choose. In orange are the vaccinated kids in my practice, and it's age matched. Remember there was 561 unvaxxed? We matched it as closely as we could to a vaccinated person that was closest in age. So it was sort of a way of randomizing, but making the, so we were comparing apples to apples. You can't compare a newborn to an 8-10-year-old. The newborn doesn't have any problems. So it looks like, wow, they're doing great. So this is age-matched data. I'm going to go through it fairly fast for time's sake, but look at the asthma. So we had in our vaccinated population almost 350 visits for asthma by age 10 to 50 by in the unvaxxed. Here's allergic rhinitis. Here's sinusitis. Just look at the proportions of the difference. There are magnitudes of 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 times more of these problems in the vaccinated. Here's behavioral issues. Here's ADD, ADHD. This one was interesting. See that blue line is flat line? We had 0 cases of ADD, ADHD in my unvaxxed population of 561 people. Now, probably half those kids were too young to be diagnosed, right? You notice we diagnose it around age 4, 5, 6. Those are days along the bottom. But still, that's impressive. Respiratory infections, otitis media, that's another infection, ear infection, ear pain. Other infections, conjunctivitis or eye infection. Wait a minute, this doesn't make any sense. I thought vaccines were supposed to help you not have infections. The unvaxxed are not getting infections. Have any of you heard that if your unvaccinated child is putting our children at risk, right? You hear that? They're talking about it with COVID now. Well, actually, the data is showing that the unvaccinated rarely get sick, so they're not going to put your kids at risk. They're actually healthier. It's the vaccinated kids who are getting sick all the time, bringing that illness to expose others. So that's all backwards. Here's eye disorders. Eczema is a dry skin. Dermatitis is another irritated skin. Urticaria is allergic rash. Anemia. Back when I was in medical school in the early training years, it was hammered into us. Anemic kids have poor brain development. Lots and lots of studies about this. So we screen for anemia in pediatrics at 9 months. Every 9-month-old in almost any pediatric office in the country gets a finger, toe poke, something. We make sure you're not anemic. Because, boy, we don't want to miss that. It could cause brain problems. Well, look what's causing the anemia. There's almost no anemia in the unvaxxed and this massive spike in the vaccinated kids. I mean, that's 1,000. That's 1,000 compared to under 200. So what was the response of the medical board to my publishing the data that they asked for? Remember they said, prove that the vaccine-friendly plan is as safe as the CDC schedule. Well, there it is. Order of the medical board, suspend my practice immediately. I got a call from my attorney the next day. He says, Paul, you can't go into the office. You can't call any patients. You can't write any prescriptions. You cannot practice medicine from this moment on. I was like, wow. I had to basically abandon my patients and with no notice. So Jeremy Hammond is a journalist, and he wrote this book. It's actually a masterpiece that did a lot of the work for my attorneys because he took their complaint, which was 10, 12 pages long, all their actually bogus complaints, and just shredded them with scientific research. So that's an interesting book about that journey. So for those of you who missed it, I'm going to give you the lightning fast thing here. So my data from the vaxxed unvaxxed study, in orange are the vaccinated, age matched to blue the unvaccinated. And just take a sense at the proportion of this. Asthma, allergic rhinitis, sinusitis, breathing issues, behavioral issues, ADD, ADHD, respiratory issues, otitis media, ear pain, infection, conjunctivitis, eye disorders, eczema, dermatitis, urticaria, anemia, gastroenteritis. What the heck? Everything we looked at, the unvaxxed were way healthier. So I had shared that the medical board was coming after me and coming after me. Their response to me publishing the data that they asked for was to yank my license. So that's when you guys walked in. There's a book about my story. Full disclosure, this article that we got published in a peer-reviewed journal, and it was rigorous peer review, was retracted. This happens to almost every single article that's written that shows vaccines in a negative light. They do two things. They try to discredit the author, so they took my license. And so then everybody can say, oh, well, he's that quack in Oregon. They took his license, right? And they try to get the articles retracted.
In healthcare and in medicine, every healthcare professional have a licensing board. And they are appointed by your governor to supervise the care you provide. And that makes it quite political because as a conservative medical doctor in Minnesota, a traditionally liberal state, the goal and the focus of healthcare is different politically, yet we're still talking about the same patients, the same research, all the same data, and yet your application of it to your patient ends up being challenged. And so the Minnesota Medical Board has been weaponized, unfortunately, and so conservative medical doctors are being attacked over and over and over again for supporting parent choice or patient choice for the adult patients. And my case was very similar to what happens in many of the liberal states around the country, that if you don't stand by the standard slogan, vaccines are safe and effective and everybody has to do it and we're all in this together and it's for the greater good, if you pause and say, but state law allows a patient to make their choice, and our code of ethics, all medical doctors have the same code of ethics that literally starts with patient autonomy, and that we will do no harm, and that, well, we will support a partnership with the patient, that's just not supported by some of the medical boards around the country. So as we've learned the political influences on our licenses, and to be fair, not every medical doctor is fully aware of the political influences on our standards. Once you know it, you have to decide what line you're going to be on. I've decided, like many of us, I'm going to stand on the side of freedom, on health freedom, and fight for that for the rest of my career.
And they have not taken your medical license away, but what did they take away from you?
The medical board challenged me after I made some public comments on vaccine safety, quoting CDC data, quoting federal law from 1986, that protects the vaccine industry from certain types of litigation, and some of the vaccine injuries I have seen in my practice. And that was done in the realm of free speech. And so we were suing our Minnesota Medical Board to get them to back off, because I didn't have any patient complaints. I'm just speaking my opinion using government data. And it got pretty expensive, so we decided to settle the case. And the local newspaper in Minnesota, Star Tribune, was not happy that we settled the case. They wanted to see me lose my license. So they wrote a scathing, terrible article about me. And business doubled. We had to open up a new clinic. And we're rapidly trying to expand. So my hope is that the Star Tribune will write another article the next time we need to get a bump up in our business. But I have what's called a stipulation on my license. I have to go through some re-indoctrination training where I'll learn how to go back into, plugged into the Matrix, if you've seen the movie.
Yeah.
And I'm going through that. I have to write a 5-page paper of what I've learned through the experience. And then I will keep fighting to make sure that we hold accountability at the medical board license, not just for Minnesota, but for any doctor who wants to support their patients and their patients' right to participate in their own medical decision-making. And that should not be a novel, unique idea. We should all have that in our hearts, but only half of us do, the conservative doctors.
President of the California Medical Board, how does it feel to be in charge of the quality of medical care in all of California, the largest state in the country? Do you have any comment on the FSMB threatening physicians with revoking their license for spreading misinformation? Does the California Medical Board take a position on that? You're a lawyer and you're the president of the medical board. Is a physician the president of the California State Bar?
Okay, I'm gonna call the Walnut Creek PD right now, Eric.
Okay. I'm a physician, just trying to ask some questions here. Just wanna know your position as the president of the medical board about the FSMB threatening physicians revoking their license.
Why don't you just go back here,
Okay, we can certainly end this interview right now. Okay.